ladies and gentlemen, worldwide, welcome to Vicious Whispers with fighter, father, author, your host, Mark Tullius.
Hello, episode 4. Thank you for joining me. Today's short story is Ultimate Wish. Kind of a fun one. It's an old ass story that I redid. I looked up all that info earlier today. Let's see. When was it? 10 years ago. I think I completed it December. Yeah. So I completed that story December 2007. 10 years ago. That's crazy. I totally rewrote it. Now it's... I dig it. So yeah, we will play that later in the episode. And then we'll have a little discussion. We also have a Goodreads question. I will answer. That's such a good question that I'm going to have to do it in two parts. But that will all come later. So I had a pretty awesome last couple of days, except for my son being a little pain in the ass. But that's okay. I'm going to learn how to be a better father, and we are going to get through this little defiant stage. But besides that, on Friday, I recorded episode 100 of Unlocking, which is my other podcast. If you haven't checked that out before, check that out. A little bit different, not as structured as this. And right now I am reading my short, I'm reading from 25 Perfect Days, my dystopian nightmare. We are on story 2020. But yeah, so episode 100 is about to go out. If you do want to check out earlier episodes and are interested in some sci-fi and you want to save yourself the money by not buying it on Audible, you can hear me narrate these stories. And I think it begins at episode 79. So yeah, if you're into sci-fi, George Orwell, 1984 type stuff, yeah, for sure, check it out. What else? Oh, but on Friday, besides recording the podcast, which was cool, first we did a yoga session. I do a lot of yoga on my own, but I owe that to Anthony Johnson, who also was the co-host on Unlocking at the start. He was my yoga instructor. I went to him because I had a very bad knee injury. I tore my ACL. It was more than halfway torn. The doctor told me I had to have surgery because it was going to blow, especially if I tried doing jiu-jitsu. But instead of doing surgery, I did. I rehabbed it with yoga. That made me see the importance of it for just overall. I dig it. I need it, especially now that I can't do jiu-jitsu while I'm taking a break and trying to rehab my neck. It definitely keeps me sane. But yeah, I had a cool session with him. Learned a lot, and now I could add it to my practice. So that was cool. On Saturday, I went to the SBJJIF World Tournament for my daughter. My daughter and 36 other kids from our school, 10th Planet Youth Center in Whittier, competed in jiu-jitsu. And I think it's probably about my daughter's 5th tournament, maybe more. She might have competed more than that. But this one, she told us beforehand that she wanted to win. It wasn't about looking for, trying a submission or trying to take down or trying to do this or trying to get points. Like, she told us in the morning, she told my wife, she's like, no, I want to win. I want to win. And she got 2 submissions, which is awesome. So she had 2 matches. 2 submissions, an armbar, and a kimura, and she won gold, and I have never seen her so proud of herself, so happy, and so I was thrilled. Like, I don't give a fuck if she wins or loses. I mean, I want her to, because I want her to, be happy, and she works hard, and all that, but I wouldn't love her anymore, or less, or any of that. I'm not one of those jiu-jitsu dads that is fucking yelling at his kid if they don't win. And I hate those dads, by the way. I don't hate them all. I get it. But it's not good for the kids. So don't do that. But it was awesome to see her win. Anyhow, I'll probably get more into that on Unlocking. That's more of the MMA type place. Although, next week's short story is Mutual Understanding, which is a MMA jiu-jitsu type story. Definitely involves it. And it's pretty awesome. Male versus female. And that story is going to kind of lead us into Unlocking the Cage, which is out now, which is still getting some great reviews. If you have read it, I do need reader reviews. I have some awesome, the editorial reviews I'm digging. I think they're fair. I think they're good. last ones have been awesome. I do have only one reader review up there, and it sucks. It's a 3. I don't know. I don't know if the book is necessarily a 3. If you think it's better than a 3, please give your input. Leave a review. If you're on Goodreads, it could even be a star rating. But yeah, I mean, maybe it is a 3. Then give it a 3. But if you think it's better, definitely do it. I think a lot of people hesitate because they think they have to write something special. It has to be sound smart. I know that's held me back before. And I wouldn't leave reviews. But once I started calling myself an author and putting myself out there, I started trying to leave some reviews at least. And I've done a decent amount of that. Maybe I'll do some more on Goodreads. Part of the problem is thinking like, why does my opinion even count? But no, it definitely does. So if you could do that for me, that would be awesome. I know a lot of people haven't read it yet. I know it's a longer book. I kind of wrote it with the intention of it being read, you know, chapter at a time or taking it slowly. It's a course of a 3-year period that it covers. So if that's your kind of thing, check it out. But yeah, it's available on Amazon right now, and the hardcover will be coming out December 5th. So looking forward to getting those out. If you do want to hear more about that, I was just on another podcast, MMA News Podcast. I believe that episode will be coming out this week. All right. So every week we do answer a question from Goodreads. This week's question of the week: where did you get the idea for your most recent book? And I wasn't sure how to take that at first. I was like, okay, where did I get the idea for the most recent? First off, which book is my most recent book? The book that just came out, Unlocking the Cage, and the one I'm working on right now, which is Messiah. So what I would like to do next week, I will answer, I'll talk about Unlocking the Cage, my most recent, the one that's just coming out. I am excited about it. But it's a little hard to sometimes shift gears. It's weird. All week long I'm working on Messiah. I'm thinking about this crazy scenarios and everything else, all this fiction. And then I do a podcast and where I'm doing an interview about MMA and all this other stuff that I've kind of forgotten and I'm just not in that world. So sometimes it's a little hard going back and forth. So next week we're going to make that transition. We'll talk about Unlocking the Cage, get into the MMA story, and go into that book a little bit. Don't worry, there'll still be some death. I'll sprinkle that shit in. In fact, maybe I'll read some flash fiction or who knows. Who knows what we'll do. But I do know next week is Mutual Understanding and Unlocking the Cage type shit. This week, though, alright, so where did I get the idea for Ain't No Messiah? Man, this one goes back pretty far. I had already been working on a book that's just called The Bridge, working title, and I knew it was part of a series. I knew it was going to be this, like, I wasn't sure exactly, but like Ragnarok retelling, and I don't know, I think I was pretty, maybe let's say 20 or 30,000 words into the book, super rough draft, but I had a lot of it plotted out, and I was going at a pretty good speed. And then I was having a conversation with my wife. The idea was kind of in my head already about this Messiah type character. Actually this kid who was told he was the Messiah and didn't like it. The talk I had with her just made it that much stronger. And then she made me realize that maybe I could blend it into this series. And so I realized it was a 5-book series, and this Messiah character is plays a big part. And but that happened, shit, I think it was 2010, let's say 7 years ago. So I was enjoying The Bridge, it was going pretty well, but I got this idea and I had to put it to the side. Started on Ain't No Messiah. I might have also been working on something else, but whenever I could, I would work on Ain't No Messiah. I got a rough draft of it done, the first draft of it done, I gave it to my editor, and he told me, Anthony Spock, and he was told me all the reasons why certain things just weren't working for him, gave me suggestions. We had a lot of back and forth, and I realized that he was right on so many different things, but I did not have the time or energy to go into it because I think I might have been, who knows what it was, if it was Brightside or 25 Perfect Days, but there was always something that would keep me away from it. I think I would revisit it in between books and do a little bit of work on it, but with Unlocking the Cage, there was no way. But when I got close to finishing Unlocking the Cage, that's when I jumped back to Ain't No Messiah. I realized so many of Anthony's ideas were pretty awesome, and I started plugging them in. And yeah, I'm super happy with the way it's developed. I've realized that now there's so much shit in it now that just wouldn't have been there before. You know, as a totally different person, different time, different events taking place, different understanding, different, just everything. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I only have 3 more scenes to go over. I will be finishing those, hopefully, and they're all short. Like, one's a quick little crucifix dildo with the wife type scene being filmed. Not sure if there's penetration yet or not. So, don't want to... Spoiler alert. I wonder... I don't know. It doesn't feel like a spoiler alert when I don't know whether or not the scene is actually going to be in the book or not. And it's still kind of far away and it has to be edited and all that stuff. I think this is staying though. So if you don't want to know, just cover your ears or go, make that noise for a really long time. Maybe 10 seconds. But the scene on my desk involves a crucifix dildo, Josh and his wife, and a camera and his wife's brother. So it gets a little weird. But yeah, I will be writing that scene and the final scene. Hopefully on Monday when I'm getting tattooed, getting my back done up. So that should be good. I should be just about done. I'm fucking excited about it. Cause then I can move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Always something. But yeah, I think that more than covers where I got the idea from. I'll give credit to my wife. I probably give her too much credit. I think the idea was this. The idea must have been in there already. She just pulled it out. But no. My wife is awesome at that. She's helped with a lot of ideas. So I do give her a lot of credit. Oh, but that scene. That's what's on my computer right now. My computer's always open. And I have those pages printed right on the desk. I mean, I don't put it on my desk. It wouldn't be a problem if I did use a desk, but my desk is usually the kitchen table or right outside, but I generally leave my shit on the kitchen table. And just from a young age, when my daughter was able to start reading, we always told her, hey, just don't read daddy's stuff. If there's something laying around, we told my niece that too. It was like, you know, I read a lot of inappropriate stuff that just maybe would scare you guys, or you just don't need to be seeing it. And so I guess I just trust my daughter not to read it. But yeah, I really would not want her reading the pages that were left out there today. So maybe I'll start being a little more careful with my stuff. Because I know Jake, he would definitely read it if he could. Right, so we answer that shit. So yeah, next week's question. Maybe there's another, if you have a quick one, definitely put it up there. Either on social media or on Goodreads, whatever. And I will try to answer it along with the next one where we talk about the idea for Unlocking the Cage. Go into that. Where I try to answer the question of what the fuck is wrong with me. That's pretty much the gist of that book. Well, the starting point. But we'll go more to that on episode 5 next week. Be sure to check it out and be sure to subscribe. Tell your friends. You know, this is the new podcast. I'm not doing a whole lot of marketing or anything like that. So the more you guys can tell people and share it, the better it will be. So I appreciate it. All right, guys, story time. Here is Ultimate Wish, narrated by T. Quillen, taken from the Somber Stroll audiobook, available on Amazon, iTunes, all that good stuff. All right, hope you dig it.
ultimate wish. I might be a bit old for a DJ, but the board members seated behind the tables still listen to their music on vinyl. I've been committed to this event for the past month, but not even I knew who the special singer would be. Just that it'd be someone on the Billboard's top 10. I said, "I'm honored to have been selected for this, I really am. And giving away all the tickets to students, that's something else." Northwood, the bony old man in the middle, dismissed me with a wave of skeletal fingers.
"The pleasure is ours. You're helping a young girl's dream come true."
A sound check buzzed beneath my feet. I said, "I have to admit, I really don't get it, though." Past winners had been flown around the world, performed death-defying stunts, and enjoyed every extravagant thing they could imagine. One young boy would have gone to the moon if they hadn't died 2 days before countdown. All she wants is a show? Garrett, the youngest of the group, yet older than my mother, cleared her throat. "A live performance televised across the world." At the other end of the table was Burlington, with his shiny dome surrounded by wisps of white hair. He wagged his finger at my chest and said, "And with you as the host." Northwood revealed the special guest. I couldn't stifle my sigh. "Are you serious?" Northwood shrugged.
"He is the one that she requested, very specifically."
"How much did his record company donate?" Burlington said. "Neither Mr. Carter nor anyone affiliated with him in any way has contributed to our cause. This is the kind of once-in-a-lifetime exposure that money can't buy." "Have any of you even heard this guy sing?"
"No. I'm afraid I don't keep up with the younger generation's music."
Northwood templed his fingers and cracked a small smile.
"But I'm told you play Mr. Carter quite regularly."
"I don't touch the programming," Garrett said.
"Well, Miss Carey wants Mr. Carter up on that stage, so that's what we're going to give her."
"Of course," I said, sorry for the fuss. "Is there anything special you would like me to do or say? Anything I have to plug?" Northwood said,
"No, just understand what a special moment you're giving her."
I meant it when I said, "I'll do my best." Garrett made a production of studying her gold watch.
"The show starts in an hour, so you will probably want to head over to wardrobe soon."
I'd only done a handful of live shows, and all of those I'd been fully prepared. I asked if I'd meet the girl and Carter before we got started. Garrett said,
"By all means. Carrie is with her parents in the room next to this one."
Northwood said,
"Normally we would have put her in the suite, but Mr. Carter was very adamant that he be given the nicest room."
"What a scumbag." Burlington raised his finger like he was going to scold me. "This little girl was deemed worthy of all the contestants. We base this not on her wish, but on her. It's not up to us or you or anyone else to decide whether her use of the wish is wise. She made her choice, and it is up to us to fulfill it." It was like the third grade all over, wearing the dunce cap in the corner. Burlington waited until I held his gaze.
"That won't be a problem, will it?"
I promised that it wouldn't, and headed in the next room, curious to meet the little girl who wished for Brian Too Cute Carter, the girl who was dying. I was worried about the performer while she was counting breaths. I put on the brakes before I went too deep and thought of my niece, how a car crash took her at 10. I took a deep breath, blew it out, and prayed I'd say the right things. A huge man answered my knock, his flannel shirt filling the doorway, a thick brown beard hiding his neck. I acted like I didn't see the Fifth of Jack and reached out to shake his free hand. "You must be Carrie's father." He looked at me through glassy eyes, dark circles smudged beneath them. "Can I help you?" I left my hand out. "Skip Scranton. I'll be making the presentation tonight." His eyes grew brighter, and his hand swallowed mine, pumped it 3 times. "Frank Weaver. Carrie loves you." The sweat was slick between his palms, but I didn't pull away. I'm honored. Truly. I thought maybe you were one of the wish people. Frank released his trap, wiped his hand on his jeans. You know what I would wish for? I had a pretty good idea, but shook my head. I'd tell them to let me get my hands on that goddamn cancer. I'd wish for... From inside the room, a woman said,
Frank, you stop that and let in Mr. Scranton.
Frank stepped aside so I could squeeze into the small room that consisted of one mirror, a chair, and a couch. Carrie's frail body curled up on the cushion, her head nuzzled on her mother's lap so I couldn't see her face, her wheelchair folded in the corner. Mrs. Weaver looked like her daily dose might be off, her eyes somewhere else, her hands running through her daughter's unnaturally bright red hair. I lowered my voice and nodded at Carrie. So, this is the lucky lady, I said, wanting to kick myself for not using a better word. Frank smiled. 1,242 entrants and they picked her. That's something, isn't it? I didn't know a thing about her, but I said, I'll say. How sad my time finding out about her would be less than 5 minutes. She must be pretty special.
Yeah, my little girl's getting her ultimate wish.
Frank took a quick swig from the bottle and grimaced it down.
And here we are in good old California.
Not a big fan, huh?
California's fine. It's just we've been here before, and the flight from Portland was only a half an hour. We had our own private jet, and she slept through it.
Mrs. Weaver's eyes were back, pinned on her husband. In a harsh whisper, she said,
Frank, cut it.
He took another gulp and set the bottle on the floor.
Could have had anything she wanted. I don't care about the materialistic stuff. Just want her to experience something different, something fun, something she'll remember.
Frank, you stop that right now. It's her wish.
Mrs. Weaver's hands kept running through Carrie's wig.
We don't have to agree with it, but it's what she wanted, and it's what she's getting.
Frank softened up and said,
I know.
I motioned at Carrie and asked if she would be up for the show.
Are you kidding? She wouldn't miss it for the world.
Is she able to talk?
Would she mind answering a few questions when I bring her up? Tiny squeak came from the couch.
There's a pope pooping what?
Saying it sweet so everyone knew she wasn't serious, Mrs. Weaver said,
Now, now, young lady.
Carrie turned over. The face of an angel. An angel at the end of a brutal battle she wouldn't win. She said,
At least I didn't use the word Dad always uses.
I knelt beside the couch and took her hand. Hi, sweetheart. I just wanted to meet you before the show started and tell you how great it made me feel to have you pick me as the presenter. I'm so honored. Although it looked like it required a great deal of effort, Carrie smiled.
That's so cool.
She sounded half asleep, her eyes struggling to stay open.
I love your voice. In the hospital bed, I just close my eyes and listen to you. You make me happy. Make me forget my pain.
Thank you for sharing that. I wiped at my eye, told myself to get it together. This was a happy day. No time for tears. I'm glad it helped. Carrie's eyelids slid shut.
Daddy, I'm thirsty.
Frank opened the blue cooler and popped the top on a tall energy drink.
Here you go, honey.
I got out of the way while Carrie's mom helped her sip from the can. Frank rubbed Carrie's hair, the wig gliding under his giant hand.
My girl can have anything she wants. Today's a testament to that.
Obviously not everything, but at least she'd have this wish fulfilled. I said a quick goodbye and told Carrie I'd see her on stage. She said she couldn't wait. Carter's suite was at the end of the hallway. No one answered the first knock, so I did it again. Josh Johnstone, Carter's best friend and guitar player, opened the door. "What you want?" "A friend who would pay me an outrageous amount of money to play the same three chords over and over would be nice, but I kept things simple. I'll be introducing you guys tonight. Is Mr. Carter in?" Josh pointed to the couch beside him. "You can wait if you want." I stepped over a wadded-up t-shirt, ravaged fruit basket, a broken picture frame, only to discover that there was nowhere to sit. Liquor bottles, soda cans, an empty baggie with a white residue, most certainly not sugar, covered the leather cushions. Looks like I missed one hell of a party. "Nah, man, that's gonna be after the show. We'll get someone to clean all this crap up before then." The bedroom door opened, and a shirtless Brian Carter walked into the room, buttoning his jeans. Barely glancing at me, he grabbed a box of chocolates, inspected it, and then let the box fall to the floor. I picked up a barely touched box off the couch. "There's some in this one." Carter pulled out a swirly truffle, left me holding the box. "All about knowing what you like and sticking with it." He tossed the chocolate into his mouth and nudged Josh's shoulder. "Speaking of which, want to do some sticking?" A gorgeous blonde strolled out of the bedroom, a leather jacket draped over her shoulder. She walked past Carter and brushed her hand across his back.
"Sorry, Brian, but we had a deal."
She sounded just as sexy as she looked when she draped the jacket over the bar stool and said,
"There's only one of these, and you're wearing it."
Blondie was barely out the door when Carter told Josh,
"Sorry, bro. Don't trip, though. She wasn't all that great."
He was full of shit. I'd attended more than enough Hollywood parties to know a pro when I see one. And I guarantee Blondie hadn't come cheap. Carter turned to me.
"So, you're the presenter?"
"That's me, Skip Scranton."
"Oh, I know who you are," Carter said. The way he said it almost sounded like a threat.
I ignored it and said, "Is there anything special you'd like me to say when I bring you out?" Carter kept with his stupid smirk.
"Yeah, tell them I'll be granting wishes back here after the show. Ladies only, of course."
I faked a laugh. "I'm not too sure that'd go over on live TV. Maybe something a little more PC would work."
"Relax, man. I'm just screwing with you. Just tell them the man of their dreams is about to play the number one hit they've all been dying to hear."
I didn't say a word, but I guess my face showed plenty. Carter said,
"Now what's wrong?"
"Just the choice of words." Josh said,
"Dude, the girl, the one we're playing for."
"What about her? Is she retarded? I don't have a problem with them, but they kind of creep me out."
I kept my cool, told him no, Carrie was not retarded.
"Good.
Because I did this one charity deal where this big lug climbed all over me, wouldn't let me go, and he got his nasty drool all over my favorite shirt, had to throw it out, made it smell like fish."
I searched the heartthrob's baby blues, hoped I'd catch a glimpse of goodness. "She's dying."
"Oh, that sucks."
Carter walked over to the thick leather jacket and slipped it on, staring at himself in the mirror, flexing his chest and stomach. He said,
"But really, aren't we all?"
"Most of us aren't 11 knowing we won't see 12. Carter stopped posing and looked right at me.
"I saw on HBO. I heard what you said about me."
I'd forgotten all about that panel, how I'd run my mouth a little much.
"I don't remember what I said, but whatever it was just my opinion. No more important than anyone else's."
"Are you done?" Carter asked. "Because if you are, you should probably go down to your precious girl's room and tell her that I won't be playing tonight." "Why would you do that?" "Because I can."
It had to be a bluff. I asked,
"Is that the kind of publicity you want?" "I'll tell them my throat's strained and that I'm oh so sorry. I will donate a portion of the next month's sales to a scholarship in her name."
Josh grinned. That ain't a bad idea. We'll skyrocket. And to show them how much I care, I'll tell them I'll sing for her as soon as I'm better. I said, she'll probably be dead in 2 weeks. Then you better go out there and tell the world just how good my record is and what a swell guy I am. Carrie deserved better than this jerk, but she also deserved to have her wish granted. I wouldn't be the one to take it away. I promised Carter I'd do what he said. Between makeup and wardrobe, the next hour sped by. Backstage, I walked through my vocal exercises, doing deep breathing, figuring out the best possible way to phrase things. I ignored the sound of the building crowd on the other side of the curtain, all those little girls dying to see a star. The loudspeaker announced my name. Time to get this show started. I walked to the mic in the middle of the stage to a roar of applause. The crowd on their feet, the entire auditorium packed. I waved for everyone to calm down and glanced stage right. 3 board members and Blondie were standing next to Carrie and her parents. Carrie was upright in her wheelchair, wearing a beautiful red dress, the same shade as her wig. Northwood bent down beside her and handed Carrie a gold package just big enough to be a jewelry box. He turned to me and motioned for me to proceed. With the crowd's full attention, I introduced myself and thanked everyone for coming out on such short notice. But this special event wouldn't be happening if it weren't for one very special girl. Tonight we're celebrating Carrie Weaver. Let's give her a warm welcome. A huge thank you for making this happen and letting us all be part of her ultimate wish. I motioned for Carrie to join me. The cue for the curtains to part and reveal the massive screen. The applause was tremendous as Carrie wheeled herself over, looking every bit the excited 8th grader, blue eyeshadow and red lipstick, and those shiny white teeth sparkling. The exercise had winded Carrie, but she kept up the smile and waved hello to the crowd. Carrie's video filled the giant screen behind us. I wheeled Carrie around and rested my hand on her thin shoulder, watched her 10-year rise and 1-year fall. The video ended, and I wheeled us around. The auditorium was silent, except for some muffled sobs. No one yelling for the act. I gave myself 3 beats before I attempted to talk. So, Carrie, the question everyone wants to know, why did you wish for tonight's extra special guest?
It had to be him.
Carrie passed the gold present back and forth between her hands.
I've been in the hospital for the last 6 months, and I heard this song every day. His voice stuck in my head, playing over and over all day long. I just had to see him perform it in person.
The crowd of young girls screamed their approval. I didn't ask Carrie if she knew the song was a remake of a song as old as her dad. I simply said I was honored to be part of her wish, and then wheeled her over to a spot at the edge of the stage. The screen began to rise, and I turned to the crowd. Here's the moment Carrie and the rest of you have been looking forward to. Playing his number one hit, Died in Your Arms, for the first time live. Here is Carter. Johnston took his spot near the back of the stage while Carter sauntered out in his blue jeans, cowboy boots, and leather jacket. Walked out like he was too cool to be there. Didn't even look our way. Didn't say a word. Just went right into the song. I shouldn't have been surprised Carter was lip-syncing and doing a terrible job of it. He was too busy playing the audience, but never turning to Carrie. She didn't seem to mind. Her smile was still there, all her focus on her idol. The final stanza began, and Carter returned to the spotlight at the center of the stage, running one hand through his hair, holding the microphone high with his other to block his lips. Carter started the last line. A giant blast knocked me to my knees, blanking out my sight and sound. A light rain on my face. My ears were ringing, the blackness fading. I looked toward the stage,
Screams filled the stadium as the smoke cleared. Carter's legs lay on the stage, his upper body nowhere to be seen, a river of red pumping from his shredded torso. I used my upper sleeve to wipe the gore from my face and slipped on the slick floor trying to get around the wheelchair. Carrie was in shock, her bright white teeth gleaming through all that red. Her presence gold wrapping crumbled on her lap. I couldn't tell if she was registering the mess in the middle of the stage, but positioned myself to block her view. I held both her hands and said, "I'm so sorry, sweetie. Don't look. Close your eyes." Carrie laid her beautiful brown eyes on me.
"Why? It was perfect."
She pressed a small remote into my hands.
"Wishes do come true."
Alright guys, Ultimate Wish. Hope you enjoyed it. That was from Somber Stroll. That was my latest, another first-person story. This time the narrator was a DJ. Something I have never done, but something, it's on my list of things I would like to do. My 5-year list, which is a best-selling book, movie or TV show, hopefully both, and DJ for a radio station. Ideally, either Liquid Metal, Sirius Liquid Metal, Ozzy's Boneyard, or Octane, one of those three. So that's something I thought I would like to do. Although my friend Brian pointed out, he's like, well, wouldn't you rather just do your podcast? He's like, fuck having to, you know, appear at a certain time and I always having to record a show. And it's like, yeah, you do have a point. Even if it's like a 1 or 2 hour obligation. I like having an open schedule and being able to do shit when I want to do it. Right now it's 9:30 Sunday night. This is when I have free time. This is when I feel like doing this. After this, I'll exercise, maybe write a little bit. Who knows? But I like being able to do shit when I want to do it. And when my schedule allows. I did have a chance this year to be a guest DJ. I was a guest DJ on Ozzy's Boneyard, Sirius Radio. I got to pick 5 songs and say why I was picking them. The sound quality was fucking terrible because I was on my cell phone, and that's how they have you record it. But here.
Hey, what's up? I'm Mark Tullius, an author from Whittier, California, and today I'm the ultimate center on Ozzy's Boneyard. I want to start my show off with my favorite song from Iron Maiden called The Trooper. I was in 6th grade when my older brother Mike brought home Iron Maiden's Peace of Mind cassette. This was the fastest and loudest music I'd heard, and I was fascinated by Eddie and the badass artwork. But what I loved most was the lyrics. Flight of Icarus, To Tame a Land, Quest for Fire, Where Eagles Dare. Every song on that album told a story. Each song made me think, want to learn, use my imagination, and tell my own stories. There are so many incredible Maiden songs that it's nearly impossible to pick just one. But I went with The Trooper because it's my 9-year-old daughter's favorite. Nothing beats playing guitar while my sweet little girl sings along. And I can't wait to take her to their show this July. So here it is, The Trooper on Ozzy's Boneyard. That was Criminally Insane from Slayer, the song I used as an epigraph to start off Twisted Reunion, my collection of 28 horror stories. I used the line from the Masters of Metal to acknowledge Slayer's huge influence on my writing and to warn readers the stories are dark, dirty, and full of death. I discovered Slayer when I was an angry young freshman in Catholic high school and was blown away by Rain and Blood. Slayer's speed, power, and incredibly dark subject matter was the answer to my prayers. Brutal lyrics, ripe with pain, hate, and unquenchable anger. No candy coating, no hinting at violence. This was a close-up. Slayer let me know I wasn't the only one with dark, twisted thoughts, and I shouldn't be afraid to express them. Maybe I've outgrown carving pentagrams on myself, but I'll always be a fan. I'm Mark Tullius from Whittier, California, and today I'm the ultimate center on Ozzy's Boneyard. The next song I want to play for you is Welcome Home Sanitarium from Metallica. Metallica has so many incredible songs. I've been listening to them since they first came out. But this is definitely one of my favorites. Here it is, Welcome Home Sanitarium.
So, they didn't offer me the gig yet, but once I'm super famous, they're going to be like, dude, come on, you love metal, fucking, you like talking nonsense, come and join us. But yeah, but it's got to be on my terms now. Yep. So we'll see. Maybe it will still happen. Who knows? But I do love heavy metal, especially the old shit. Although I listen to a good amount of new music, but it's usually by bands that have been around a long ass time. All right. Another thing with a story too, small thing, but having a job that prevents you from speaking your mind. I think that's something that I've always disliked. Jobs with restrictions, especially telling you what you can or can't say or how you can talk to someone. And, nah, I'd rather not. It's probably also one of the reasons why I didn't stay at jobs very long. I think like 2 years might be the max I stayed at any one place. 2 to 3. And off and on. Like, I don't know. I'm not a fucking 9 to 5 type of guy. And, that's not the kind of job I would want to do. And the jobs I would do, I would be able to write, and which made it bearable. It's like, okay, I'm getting paid to, I'm doing my job, but then I'm also on the side. I am getting paid to write and paid to work on my stories. So we'll see. Who knows? I'm going to modify that, my wish list. And I think that's an important thing to do. I think it's an important thing to have. And we'll get into that in a bit. Because really, this story is about, again, fear of death. Also, the randomness of death. Little kids getting cancer. This story was written before I had kids. And, I don't know. I think it's something that just always scared me. It's something sad. It sucks. It's definitely something I struggle with. Just that, the fear of death, fear of cancer, fear of something like that, fucking getting you before, or a loved one, which is even worse, I think, before their time. I think that fear, I don't know, so I think that fear was always there. It worsened for me when first father-in-law, I watched him die of brain cancer in a matter of, I think it was about 3 weeks. So he was healthy 1 week, feeling great. Or maybe I think he was having little headaches or something like that. And then 3 weeks later, he was dead. The cancer was that aggressive. And I know I definitely had a hard time with that. And I realized, fuck, man, we see tragedy all the time. Doesn't have to be cancer. Doesn't have to be, it could be fucking anything. But there's always death. We always know someone. If you're on social media, you always see someone fucking dying. Even if it's not the news where there's always even that many more people dying. So I think there's always that. It's always there. It could always be a fear. If we block it as much as we want. But we always know, like, fuck, man, we're going to go at some point. Our loved ones are going to go at some point. Who's going to be first? I know I probably spend way more time thinking about that than the average person probably. But I am glad that I have given it that much thought. Something that just happened. My wife just found out today that a friend of hers from high school, his wife just passed after a battle with cancer, and it really shook her. And, my wife was saying, she's like, fuck, we're so, you know, we're too young for this. I was like, no, I was like, we're incredibly lucky to even have been living this long. Not that long ago, a really good friend of mine was dealing with, he also had cancer and a broken back, but he fought it and he's beaten it. But again, I had a super hard time when I heard about that, because it not only feeling bad for him and his family, but then making me think of my own mortality. But I'm glad that I have adopted this, you know, approach to death where, like, no, fuck, we're super lucky that we're here. I'm lucky that I'm here today. I'm lucky that I didn't get killed yesterday. I'm lucky my daughter didn't die last night. I'm lucky my son didn't die this morning. Fucking, so I'm going to appreciate shit. It's also going to motivate me. It's going to make, one of the things I'm going to redo, I'm going to redo that list of what I want to get done in the next 5 years, and where I want to live, and where my retirement's going to be, and I'm only thinking that way. I'm not thinking any bad shit is going to happen. I'm well aware that it can, but I do not No, I'm going to pretend that nothing's going to happen. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to write X amount of books. I'm going to enjoy these amount of days. I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to see the places I want to see. And not only that, so I think setting those goals, I think that's important. And then figure out what you want from life, help motivate you and so you can achieve it. But then also being realistic and be like, not making this wish list and thinking, oh, I'm gonna win the lottery and that's how I'm gonna accomplish this. It's like, no, it's like, what am I gonna do to achieve this? How is this gonna happen? And then using that to fucking motivate you. Or don't. Whatever. That's how I've been, that's what I'm going for. And that helps me. But death is we're not going to beat it. Could strike at any time. Life is fucking precious. Especially, and it's fragile. It could be gone at any moment. Do something with it. Don't fucking waste it. Don't regret. That's my big thing. So, tonight, I think I'm going to call quits. Because what I would really like to do right now, I want to get a quick little workout. Well, first I'm going to smoke. Then I'm going to do some yoga. Then I might do some other shit. And I want to play guitar. And it's already close to 10 o'clock. So you guys are going to get shorter a little bit this week. But next week is going to be super special, fucking awesome. It's going to be cool. So that will be the Mutual Understanding short story. It's a long one. And narrated by my friend Donna Gonzalez from Matt Therapy podcast. If you haven't checked that out, definitely listen, especially if you dig jiu-jitsu and female empowerment. So that will be next week, but right now, and also remember you could check out episode 100 of Unlocking, which will be out, I believe, Wednesday morning. So check out that and stick around for next week. Be sure you subscribe, tell your friends, all that good stuff. Help me spread this like a bad case of herpes, please, all over, and not just the mouth. I want this shit everywhere. All right, guys, thanks again for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week. Tell your family you love them, because you might be dead tomorrow. Yep, fucking sucks, but that's how it works. So make the most of it. All right, later.